We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ. Oh, my goodness! Stunning! Devontae deep! Oh, my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-footer!
Stop it! Graham. Just stop it already!
All right, welcome in to another BuzzBeat podcast. We are a proud member of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Today, it will be myself, Spencer Percy, and Brian Geisinger. We're going to discuss really what is the most important points of the off-season agenda for the Hornets. Some Malik Monk, big decisions, Terry Rozier, a few options the Hornets could go on him. And then, of course, Devontae Graham will be a restricted free agent this summer. Before we jump in, I just wanted to thank all of our members. I think we've got close to 10 now, if maybe not a few more. Over at Buy Me a Coffee. If you haven't checked that out yet, the link will be in the episode notes. So please go join some really, really good content. I've got an off-season preview piece coming this week. Brian had some very in-depth kind of Hornets playbook content last week, and I know he's got more coming. And Richie's also had some really good pieces on there too. Most recently, I believe, about kind of a deep dive on Miles Bridges and his progression. So if you haven't checked that out yet, please go do so. And we'd appreciate anybody that would consider joining. Wanted to shout out our most recent member, Maxton Artis, who was very generous with his donation and is now a member. So if you haven't checked that out, please go do so. Not to toot our own horn, but I do thank BG that our Hornets content is pretty in-depth. So I actually think you're really getting some bang for your buck there. On that note, BG, what's up?
Not much. Enjoying the playoffs, getting ready for the draft. Nah, man, things are pretty good. And yeah, more stuff coming at the Buy Me a Coffee site. Last week, I sort of focused on a couple of different ways, like the Hornets like to use Miles Bridges in the post. And I've got something queued up for either later this week or early next week or something like that. That'll be on another one of Charlotte's sort of like go-to sets and how they use PJ Washington in it. So a lot of stuff in the pipeline here, but I'm hanging in, man. How about you? How is the, how's the family doing here?
Good. Yeah. Can't complain. You know, playoff basketball has been pretty fun, I think, so far. I don't mind, the LAs and the New Yorks. I guess we have one LA team remaining, but I don't mind some of the bigger headline teams that have been eliminated so far. I think it's a lot of fun that we have, Chris Paul and the up and coming Utah Jazz and, up and coming Denver Nuggets, who would be a title contender without the Murray injury. Like, it's just a fun collection of up and coming NBA teams with young talent, which I think is really cool.
It's the Murray injury is just like, I mean, it's been a bummer every day since it happened, but seeing how close they are, like they could, I mean, I think Phoenix is going to win this series, but like, that game was close before Chris Paul just went nuts last night. And like Denver's this close to making the Western Conference Finals without, an all-star caliber, pick and roll dynamo at point guard with Murray, which is just crazy. Like they're not going anywhere anytime soon. And I don't know, Michael Porter Jr. kind of giveth and taketh right now, but man, he is a ridiculous shot maker. And, you know, we get to have the, like, you know, what if Klay Thompson was 6'10" sort of, you know, discussion with him. Not quite the off ball mover, obviously, that Klay is, but man, he is a special talent shooting the ball. And, I don't know. I was thinking about you and Richie, and because we've talked about this stuff over the years, but also like the community around BuzzBeat when the Clippers were staving off elimination and then knocking the Mavs out of the playoffs. The Nick Batum Renaissance continues, and I don't know. There was some little moment while watching that, and then watching how well Blake Griffin has been playing for Brooklyn the last couple of games, where you're just like, you know, puts a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth how these guys, you know, they get out of their small markets in Detroit and Charlotte. They get to literally Brooklyn and LA, and all of a sudden they're, you know, they've revitalized. Like they're out here just playing a completely different brand of basketball than they have been the two previous seasons, which is a little annoying. And I know Batum didn't play that much his last season in Charlotte, but I love this stat, which is that he had 7 dunks in the first round series against the Mavs, and he would have had 8 if he had finished that one on top of Boban. He had 3 dunks his whole last season in Charlotte. Yeah, I mean, it is amazing to see. It's to see how it's Portland Batum. Like, that's what he's playing like for them.
Yeah.
And he's really, I mean, he's helping drive winning for them, along with Kawhi, obviously, just being incredible.
Yeah, it's definitely tough to swallow, BG, no question. Yeah. You know, it does. It's one of those things that does make you stop and wonder. Just like I know Blake Griffin's situation isn't the same as Nick Batum's, but right. You know, Batum specifically, you just wonder. It's like, was it just a mental thing? Like, is that what we can basically attribute this to now? He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would just quit, you know, on a franchise. And I know there was a lot of great puff pieces about how good of a teammate he was and accepting he was of his lesser role and all this stuff. But it is really hard to watch after all the basketball we watched from Nick Batum and Charlotte to, you know, like he was thrown into a time machine, you know, pre-Charlotte, to your point, and dunking and attacking closeouts and just generally being aggressive offensively, right? And maybe that's much easier to do when Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are two of your teammates that you're sharing the floor with. Maybe it's easier to be mentally free and confident, but I share your sentiment, BG. It's a little bit discouraging, is to put it lightly. So
yeah, it's gonna be funny if we get Batum versus Kaminsky in the Western Finals too.
Well, Frank's had a nice little run here. I am surprised Phoenix is, you know, their second line of centers have held up like they have so far in the playoffs. But I'm not a believer that the farther Phoenix goes, Frank Kaminsky is going to be a real part of their rotation. But I mean, he's their backup center right now, which surprises me.
They tried to knock the dust off Dario Saric in game one against Denver. And I think it's like, he played well, I thought, the first like half season for Phoenix, and like just never, he lost his confidence. And I think maybe there was an injury too, but like, I mean, to have like Frank Kaminsky usurp you in the rotation after Phoenix committed some money to him last offseason is like kind of wild. But the last thing on the Suns, just because they're really fun. But what Devin Booker's doing is incredible right now. This dude is just absolutely built for the postseason, and I just could not be more impressive with how he closed off the Lakers. And he didn't even have like his fastball going necessarily in game one against Denver, but just his shot making, the scoring from all three levels, the passing, the slashing, the physicality of his game. He can just score in literally every way, from every level, off movement, off dribble. Like, and it's interesting because Denver mixed up their coverages, and we saw some Aaron Gordon on him, and you know, Aaron Gordon tried to post him up on the other end, but just Booker's a matchup issue because until Barton or, you know, Dozier get back, because it's a lot to ask Gordon to like chase him off screens and stuff. It's different if it's like pick and roll or whatever, but or ISO, but just I don't know. I don't know if there's anyone quite else like Booker. He is sort of like, looks like the model you know, two-way wing, but with his just his confidence and his shot making, man, he is turned into one hell of a player. Really, really, really fun offensive talent. And like a much improved defender too.
Yeah, he's fun. I mean, you know, he's the exact kind of guy you want at the end of games, you know, to take big shots, you know, but you know, you highlighted everything else that he can do, and it's just great. You know, playoffs remind you every single year, among other things in this league, but things change fast. You know, players progress really, really quickly. I think Hornets fans saw that this year with Miles Bridges. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see him in a postseason, but yeah, I mean, Devin Booker's here, right? I mean, he's going to be in our deep postseason lives for the next 4, 5, 6 seasons, probably. Yeah. I mean, he's a supreme offensive wing talent, which you could always see. You really could. He passed the eye test, but it was all the ancillary things around the edges that he came up short in, and it really took very little time for the light to come on. And you wonder too, though. I mean, does it help to play one of the best point guards ever? Probably does. I mean, I'm sure that Chris Paul makes the game a little easier for Booker, but it's been fun to watch. And I think Phoenix is, you know, I think Denver's, like, to your point, they're there. They could make the Western Conference Finals. I actually kind of think Phoenix is just superior, I would say, to them. I mean, this is a good 5 or 6 game series, just from kind of what I could tell from that first game, but. It's fun. It's fun to see the Suns be relevant. It really is.
Last note before we jump into this, just you know, the further we get into these guys' careers, you know, as you're watching Phoenix, you're seeing Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton play really, really well. Like, they had great seasons, but those guys were incredible in game one. Ayton has just built himself into such a phenomenal defensive center. It really is. He made baby steps, but man, this season he took a just massive leap. But man, that 2018 draft. We've seen it like with Charlotte because of Devontae Graham and Miles Bridges turning into such an excellent player. But just seeing what Luka did, what Trae Young is doing, what Kevin Huerter is doing for the Hawks too. They're just that draft. It continues to continues. It's looking like it's going to be a really, really good one because you've still got Jaren Jackson in that class too.
You got Shea in there who, still one of the better players in the class.
And like Shea's like he could be an all-star next season and then for the next 10 years after that. So
could have been, there was an argument he was this year.
Yeah, exactly. So just turning that's looking to be a really, really impressive class. And Charlotte drafting at not the best spot in it, sort of like late lottery, looks to have actually done pretty well for itself by getting Miles Bridges, who just continues to improve as well.
It's a good point. Well, let's start with a draft that came just before that, when the Hornets selected Malik Monk. I mean, that's where I want to start our offseason agenda conversation here. You know, is Monk priority number one? Probably not, but I think he's the most interesting case for the Hornets this offseason, mostly because he's got a $16 million cap hold, which is a large number for a guy that's not going to make anywhere close to that, no matter what his next contract is annually. So let's start the conversation here, PG. To you, do you think that the Hornets should prioritize, even if it's not number one, they should make it a priority to bring Malik Monk back on another contract? Do you think that should be something Mitch Kupchak is really focused on getting done this summer, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's we've talked about this a lot. There's a couple of different ways probably to get into it. But a couple of weeks ago, you, Richie, and I talked about, you know, if you were to prioritize, Graham, Rozier, Monk, sort of like who would you want here longer term? I picked Devontae and Malik, and my reasons for Monk were he's the youngest of that group and he's the best at getting to the rim and probably the best defender of that group too, I would say. He's still super young. I would like to see Malik Monk back in a Charlotte uniform. It may be important, depending on what else they do, that Malik Monk is back in a Charlotte uniform. But it's going to be really, really hard to figure out, not to figure out, but just sort of like to decide on how they want to go about it in terms of the money because of that cap hold. Can you get Malik Monk on an extension that makes a little bit of sense? I'm not sure what the market is for him out there. That's probably somewhat of an advantage for Charlotte. I like what he can do as a fit next to LaMelo. I would make him a priority, perhaps a lower one, but I would make him a priority for, yeah, my offseason. As far as like trying to get him back at a number that makes sense. Is that an extension for $6 million a year, $7 million a year, you know, somewhere in that range, which, you know, is coming in below the full mid-level in terms of, you know, average annual value. But if you can get him on that kind of number, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know if you saw or heard any of his quotes from his sort of like end of season press conference. He brought up something. Yeah, he brought up something sort of about his playing time, and which, you know, he thought sort of had gone down a little bit. And I mean, it seems like he and Brego have a mostly good relationship, but like there is still sort of a gap in between what he expects and what he has been given in terms of playing time and role. And so it's like if Charlotte's going to continue to use him the way they are, I don't kind of really see how he can be a priority. So like my thing would be exactly. Like if you're bringing him back as a, if you're prioritizing the return of Malik Monk, which I don't think is a bad idea, then that's got to be contingent on, well, we're going to really like, he's the sixth man next year, you know, or he's the, you know, I don't think he's starting at two or whatever, but like it has to be contingent on that. And, you know, I'm hopeful to see Malik Monk back, but if he is not, then, you know, at least you can say at the last two seasons, they've given it somewhat of a shot, because it really felt like the first two seasons were just lost for Malik, especially the rookie season. So, yeah. And some of that's on Steve Clifford, and some of that is on James Borrego, his first season, as they were desperately going for the playoffs. So I would make it a priority, but it would be on the lower end, and it would be contingent on a couple of things in terms of role and money. What do you think about Monk?
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it. You know, if he's going to come back in the role that he played this season or something similar, even when he was good, I don't know how he can be a priority. You know, it's a real tricky situation with Charlotte. There's like two routes they can take. Really, there's only one if they want to keep him and actually accomplish the other things that they need to this offseason. That is to get a deal done with him, like first things first in free agency, because that's the only way they can unlock the flexibility they need from a cap perspective. I mean, Charlotte can't have a $16 million hold sitting on their books for a week and get a starting center, in my mind.
Yeah,
if their next starting center is going to come from free agency. Now that might not be the case. It might come from the draft, but you know, that's the real tricky part. Which is, you know, I think that just depends on like how engaging is Monk's camp going to be with Charlotte early in free agency. They're probably going to go shop his services, so I would guess not real engaging. I reading the tea leaves, I kind of agree with you. I don't think that if Monk hasn't felt prioritized by this team over his past 4 years, I don't think he's going to grant Charlotte first conversation in free agency. That's just a guess. But my guess is that this is just realistically thinking, this is probably a pretty easy decision with Kupchak. Go shop your services. We're going to renounce your rights. They can still have a conversation. He's just an unrestricted free agent. You know, like they can still come in and say, well, we're going to offer you the most money. But I think Charlotte has to create maximum flexibility for themselves if they were serious about throwing an offer sheet at a restricted free agent or something. And I wouldn't rule that out. So I think chances are Monk's probably not back in Charlotte. It just sucks though, BG, because I do agree with you. I would like to see Monk back. But under the cap circumstances we're facing with him, I don't see how it's possible. Because I think if you get him back on $67 million, that's a good investment. You're doubling down on a guy that has had some bad breaks but has shown some flashes the last few seasons. I mean, we talked about this last summer last offseason that, hey, maybe it's worth going ahead and extending Monk now and just saying like blind, like there's no evidence that that's a good decision, but at the number you're going to extend him at, it shouldn't be considered a bad decision, right?
I wish they had. I mean, it's revisionist history to say it now, but like at the time a year ago, or a little less than a year ago, whenever the 2020 offseason was, I don't even like remember that blob of my life. But like,
right.
We were sort of like beating that drum a little bit. And yeah, I mean, if you could have gotten Malik, I mean, the numbers that we're just throwing out, the like the 7-8, that type of number, like, I don't know, maybe not many of those types of extensions get signed, you know, like that kind of smaller number, like that just doesn't happen all that often or whatever. But if you could have got him on that, I mean, you could have retained Malik Monk, at least had him as a trade asset, even if he wasn't a part of your long-term plans. And he would be at a number that would be a fraction, you know, half, 50% or yeah, whatever, what his cap right. hold is. And that would mean yeah. that would mean a world of difference for some of these other free agency scenarios that you're proposing. So, you know, sunk cost.
I think Monk, I think you and I were on the right track, and I would be surprised if the team didn't try to talk to him about it. But I think for Monk, like looking at the season we just watched, what a lot of people were projecting from Charlotte, everybody just guessed like if Malik Monk's ever going to have an opportunity to prove himself, it's going to be this season, right? The season we just watched, which it was mainly. I mean, he had some injury, you know, unlucky injury there. But so I think it was just like Monk betting on himself, which I totally get. We'll see how it works out for him. I think you've got it nailed though. $6-8 million. I'd be very surprised if he got an annual contract above that.
Yeah. I mean, like that, and there's so few teams, like his market is going to be fascinating just based off of like, I don't think Monk is like a guy that anyone's going to throw the full mid level at, you know what I mean?
No.
But there also aren't just like, there's not a lot of like, there are a lot of teams that are, you know, working with their only their exceptions probably in free agency or projected to work only with their exceptions or whatever. So I don't know, that makes the market just a little interesting for Malik. And yeah, like both the injuries that he and Hayward had were kind of, I mean, I know this stuff happens in basketball, but they were just like bad luck injuries. Like those dudes just stepped on someone else. You know what I mean? And like, it stinks. Yeah. You know, I wish we could have had the opportunity, the playmaking reps, the final 5 weeks of the season before he came back, or you know, those five week gap in between when he got hurt and when he came back, it's missed time that you can't have it back. And who knows, maybe that wouldn't change at all how they approached free agency, but hell, you never know. Maybe it could have changed, like our opinions of Miles Bridges changed in that span of time, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And you, like you just said, when we were talking about the Sun, stuff in this league changes quickly. I don't know, there's no denying Malik's talent, and I think there's a spot for him to play in the NBA and be a guy that's on a winning team. Mm-hmm. But that may not be in Charlotte, unfortunately.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, let's move on to Terry Rozier, who, you know, I've got a piece coming out, you know, later this week on Buy Me a Coffee, which I mentioned earlier, and Rozier's case, which is also a very interesting one for Charlotte, I discussed in length. And, you know, I don't think Charlotte could have expected much more when Terry really just felt like a throw-in, like in the Kemba sign and trade. I mean, that's effectively what he was. It's kind of a last-second throw-in, another like Danny Ainge like WTF moment on his way out. Although I think the totality of Ainge's, you know, career there was good, but it's like, I mean, I know he's not happy there, but you're just gonna throw this guy in here at the last second. You could just sign Kemba with your space, like you don't even need to do. So that was weird.
It was a weird thing to do. Just real quickly as an aside, because like Ainge is, you know, not working for an NBA team now. It is fascinating how Charlotte played a role the last two seasons and sort of like how Ainge's tenure ended. Like,
yeah,
the Charlotte not giving Kemba a max or a super max or whatever, getting Rozier in the sign and trade, and then Boston just being like, Charlotte being like, say I won't to stretching Nick Batum and getting Gordon yeah. Hayward, and Boston being like, yeah. you won't do that. And then Michael Jordan being like, okay, do that. And then they did it. And like, right. it's like, that's just yeah. one of those things. Like no one, even as people are talking about Ainge and his tenure and losing Hayward, it's like something came completely out of left field. You know what I mean? And it was just
yeah.
the wild card Hornets willing to just, you know, do something a little crazy. Yeah, it's never that. I don't think that was like the straw that broke the camel's back, and it's never like one thing, but that just Charlotte's role in the final 2 years of Ainge yeah. and how that sort of things went sideways for Boston is like kind of interesting, especially if you trace their interactions back to the 2015 draft too.
Correct. Yeah, turning down the four draft picks. Yeah, it does make you think a little deeper about that's good. It's a great point about stretching Batum. That makes you think a little bit deeper about what was the real. Yeah, what was the real reasoning behind stretching Batum? Was it sticking one to the man, or was it getting a good player? Yeah,
yeah,
that's interesting. Well, Rozier, you know, back to my point, I think it would be hard for Charlotte fans, for the front office, for the coaches to say they expected much more from Rozier these past two seasons. He's a player with his warts. There's no doubt about that. But he's one of the best catch and shoot players in the league at this point. And I really think he's polished his offensive game in a lot of areas, which we've touched on already. But here's the deal with Rozier, and I think you and I are aligned on this opinion. So let's start with what Charlotte should do first, and that's probably test the trade market, take the temperature of the market on Rozier. He's an expiring contract at just under $18 million. I would, in my opinion, I would say that most people across the league would view that as a plus asset. You know, it's an expiring deal, so you can make two arguments. It's an expiring deal. It's super valuable across the league, or, he's still young. You know, Rozier's 27 years old. It would actually be more valuable if there was 3 or 4 years left on the deal. I think there's a few different ways to look at this, and we're going to get into all this. So I'll just go ahead and pitch a few trades to you, BG, and maybe you have some for me too that I've kind of circled. If I were Mitch Kupchak, here's where I would start. First, I would pick up the phone. And I would call Portland, and I would say Rozier, something involving Rozier, Charlotte, our 2021 first round pick, probably going to be 11-ish for CJ McCollum. Portland says no, and then Charlotte says, "Okay, what if we threw in PJ Washington?" That's the first thing I would do. Assess that one, BG. Bad idea. I think Portland has to think about that one. That's why I bring it up.
If I were Portland, I would do that deal in a heartbeat. Not in a heartbeat. I have to think about it because I know Dame and CJ are like, those guys are tight. And I know McCollum is good, even though he did not have a great series against Denver. And if he had shot a little bit better, maybe Portland is playing Phoenix right now. The margins are that tight, I guess. But I mean, like, Portland could really use a guy in the front court like PJ, right? I mean, he's got 2 years left on his rookie contract. You know, CJ's better than Terry Rozier, and I'll be fascinated to see how Rozier's mid-range shooting holds up next season. Like, if it does, something we talked about a lot this season, but like, is that an outlier, or is Rozier just a mid-range killer along with, you know, the catch and shoot efficiency, which we now have a 2 year sample saying he's pretty freaking good at that. I don't think it's like a horrible idea for Charlotte. I just don't think it makes them, I mean, you clear the four spot for Miles, but you lose some of your lineup flexibility with PJ. I wouldn't do that. I don't think it's like an awful idea to propose. I see why both sides would consider it, but if I were Charlotte, I wouldn't do that. If I were Portland, I would want to do that.
I get all your points, and I've thought about this one a lot. I think at the end of the day, if I were Charlotte, I probably would do that. I would probably try to go get a player like CJ McCollum. Mainly for one reason, because I think the probability of the Hornets finding, with how good this team's going to be, good enough over the next few seasons, finding another difference maker via the draft, the probability of that happening, a difference maker that really moves the needle, right? The probability of that happening has gone down all of a sudden, you know, because of how good LaMelo Ball was in year one. I don't know how many more bites of the apple a team like a franchise, a small market like Charlotte would have at getting a I still think CJ McCollum's a really good NBA player. I know he had a weird playoffs. You know, he's 29 years old. You can make an argument he's still kind of right in his prime, if not approaching the best he's going to be. And you just, again, small markets like Charlotte don't get many chances to get a player like this. And I think if you pair him with Gordon Hayward and Miles Bridges and LaMelo Ball, and you know, it eat into your cap space a little bit, but you still have some flexibility to build around. Like, I think that's a pretty formidable Eastern Conference team. And I think it's okay to be a 4, a 5, a 6 seed and then see what happens. You know, maybe they get lucky in the draft in the next few years. But I think at the end of the day, I would do it if I was Charlotte.
It's interesting. Again, to your point, the thought of those guys being 1 through 4, you know, LaMelo, CJ, Hayward, Miles, mobile center X, and then, you know, one of like Devontae or Malik as like the sixth man, you know, and Jalen. Like, that's a pretty interesting Jalen McDaniels. It's a pretty interesting team. I'm just not, I get, this is another conversation for another day probably, but just like the more broad conversation about what to do if there is even something you need to do about Miles and PJ, right? Like, you know, is there too much overlap? The diminishing returns? Do you need to move one guy or whatever? But it's like right now, PJ Washington is like, he's set up to be the best center on the team next year. You know, he's still an important piece for them at the 4. CJ is an upgrade over Rozier. And they're both going to give you largely the same thing. I just think McCollum is like a better version of it, probably a better playmaker too, but neither are very good defensively, to say the least. So you're not really getting anything there. And I just think that you lose PJ, you lose. Yeah. I mean, the guy that's right now the best center on the roster, you know, a good front court defender that can shoot threes. So I'm not putting him in there to grease the wheels on that trade. If it was Rozier in the pick for CJ, I still don't really want to do that, but you know how I feel about draft picks. But like, I would be, that would make like more sense to me, right? You know?
Yeah.
But I just can't, I get the rationale, yeah, but I can't get there. Yeah. At least not yet.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's really a fascinating thought exercise. It really is, because I think it's a very fair trade, you know, both sides, and it's the ultimate one for Charlotte fans, where I think that there's a lot of belief in PJ Washington. There should be still, you know, as Charlotte fans, we do value draft picks, right? So it's like, it's the ultimate. You got to give something up to get something, and it's hard to get all the way there. So I'm gonna throw another one at you. It's not as fun as that one, but I don't know if I would do this or not if I were Mitch Kupchak. So I need your guidance here, BG. All right, I'm calling the Clippers. I'm engaging them. I'm saying, you know, you did F up on that Luke Kennard contract. All right, you just go ahead and admit it. Let's get that. Okay, you did. Okay, you admit it. Okay, good. So how about I send you Terry Rozier? You send us Luke Kennard. We'll kick the tires on him. We'll take his contract, which is not great, not terrible. You can swallow it if you're Charlotte pretty easily. And you throw us that, what is it, 25th pick or something like that?
Yeah.
It might be a little better. Yeah, it is the 25th pick. Yeah. So is that even worth – I mean, I feel like in a vacuum, that's a pretty good way to cash out on Rozier. But at the same time, that could just be a total giveaway. So what do you think about that one?
No, I kind of like that. Kennard can give you some of the stuff that Rozier did. He's a bad defender, but you know, Terry's not very good on that end either. You'd only have him for 3 years on that contract. Like, if he shoots well, you might be able to move him at some point. Getting the 25th pick is nice, you know? Like, all of a sudden, now you're going to work with the 11th and the 25th pick. That kind of deal would be more up my alley. I could also see how some people would say, well, Terry's at the height of his, you know, he had his best season ever. He's in the prime of his career, scored the ball well, shot well from the range. You know what he does from downtown. Shouldn't we be able to get something more than, you know, Luke Kennard, a bad contract, and the 25th pick? And it's like, I don't know, because you're still getting something. Like, you know, Rozier's asset is netting you a first round pick. Like, that's not nothing, even if it is a late one. But that would be more up my alley. But if they did that, you know, you've got to have something like, I don't think the, you know, the Kennard Mello backcourt defensively is would probably not be all that great. And I'd be curious to see if they did that, how that would inform how they approached, you know, Malik Monk, perhaps. But I know this has been a lost year for Kennard, but he still shot pretty well from threes. He's been a good offensive player at times in his career when he's been healthy. And he could give you some of the movement shooting that Rozier does too. So it's like you're getting back some stuff plus a pick. And I mean, that contract isn't going to be like a necessarily like a boat anchor on the books either. So I think I would give a thumbs up to that one, but I don't think that'll be a very popular trade amongst most Hornets fans.
Yeah. I agree. I don't think it would be a very popular trade, but to your point, I think this is likely what about you can expect to get for Rozier. I think that as he enters this next phase of his career, you know, he can be one of the better catch and shoot 3-point shooters in the league. I think that's where his value will really land. I'm not sure how much more he can develop. Maybe he can, but this is the realistic trade for Hornets fans to start kind of circling with Rozier. Yeah, I mean, Kennard, I know he didn't play like a ton this season. He's been in and out. I know he showed up in game 7 against Dallas and had a really good performance, but he's young. Like, Kennard's like 24, 25 years old, yeah. BG. Like, we can't write him off yet. Yeah. And the real reason that I ended up on that trade is I started circling the Clippers because I thought they need, like, Beverly fell short. They're not getting anything from him. They're not getting anything from Kennard. Like, they need more shooting on that team.
Yeah.
You know, they need a wing that can just take a little bit of pressure off PG and Kawhi, the ball handling duties. And I thought Rozier fits perfectly with them. I think he makes them a lot better.
It really is a creative one. I mean, maybe they want a guard that gets to the rim a little bit more, but it's not like Terry's like anemic at driving. You know, like he still slashes and just maybe doesn't get, you know, he's not like a high volume rim guy, but he can still get there and stuff. It's not like he can't crack a defense. No, that's interesting. And
because I want to hear from your next ones. If I could find like an offshore book that would give me odds on both Rozier and Devontae Graham being on the opposite LA teams next year, if anyone can find that, I'm going to put a little money on that bet because I think there's a chance the Lakers will covet Graham. Totally different conversation. And I just think Rozier is a nice fit with the Clippers. So anyways, if somebody can find that bet, send it my way.
Yeah, the Devontae to LA murmurs have been they're like largely in like sort of like distant corners, but you can see why that team, not just like the insane fans online, would be sort of like targeting him as a guy that could really complement LeBron and AD quite nicely as a, you know, a passer and 3-point pull up shooter. But I also think too. You know, Rozier unlocked a bunch of different stuff once he got to Charlotte and certainly helped getting more playing time and usage too. But like maybe Borrego's system could get some of that out of Luke Kennard too, right? Like, all the movement, shooting, possession.
Put the ball in his hands more often. Yeah.
You just run everything to the opposite side now because he's left-handed. You know what I mean? But like, I think LaMelo would make his life easier. I think JB's system could also help Kennard too.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one to ponder. BG, do you have any trades for Rozier before we kind of have an extension conversation with him?
No, I've got nothing in the although there was one. I will be swiping this one. Apologies to Richie Randall, but there was one that he kicked out in a trade in like an idea to us earlier in the text thread with the three of us, where he said Terry Rozier, PJ Washington to the Pacers for Miles Turner, Caris LeVert, and a 2021, you know, second round pick. What do you feel about? Does that one do anything for you? Is Miles Turner doing anything for you?
Not particularly. I like Miles Turner partnering with LaMelo Ball doesn't blow me away.
It does not. Neither.
To be honest with you, you know, LeVert, unfortunate situation, came on a little bit towards the end of the year. You know, he's a guy, this his true shooting percentage every year is just like maybe it just cracked league average. Like I just think he's, you know, I mean, like him and Terry actually remind me of each other quite a bit. They're not the exact same player, but they have very similar, just like if you just go to Basketball Reference and compare those two, you're like, whoa, like pretty close here.
Yeah.
So I think I need a little bit more if I'm Charlotte.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. That to me is not the like, especially having PJ included in that, you know, I would stay away from that. And I get that Miles Turner, like, is a good defensive player. He really is, but I don't like his offensive game at all. I don't like center that he's not really a pick and pop guy. He's not a lob guy. He can't post. He doesn't get to the line. Like, I just don't.
Anything to the table offensively.
I don't know. I am just not nearly as excited as potentially adding Miles Turner to my roster as I don't know how many, what percentage, but like there are a lot of people that like follow the team that really think highly of him. And again, I get that because of the theoretical shooting and the rim protection, but I'm lower on Turner. So I would not do that trade.
We're aligned there. Yeah. I think if Brogdon was there in LeVert's place, I think I would be listening. Obviously Charlotte would need to throw in something at that point. Because Brogdon, I think Brogdon's a perfect fit on any roster in the NBA. Yes, he's just the most malleable player out there, one of them.
Yeah.
Man, him and LaMelo playing together. I think Brogdon could do a lot for LaMelo Ball. I think he'd really make him a better player. But
the LaMelo, Brogdon, Hayward, Miles quartet, it would be pretty awesome.
Would be pretty fun. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's transition and talk a little bit about the other option Charlotte has with Rozier. He is extension eligible. He's extension eligible all the way through this coming season. So there is no rush for Charlotte here. You know, you just heard us talk about the trade possibility with him this summer. Like, we'll see that, and that goes all the way up to the trade deadline, you know, next season. So we'll see what happens there. He's eligible for right in the ballpark of 4 years, $96 million because that's where it's capped, because his number goes down this coming season from last season on the cap hit. So, you know, I don't think it's inconceivable that the Hornets would go to the table and talk extension with Rozier. Obviously, I don't think he's worthy of anything near $96 million over 4 years kind of thing. There's probably a thought that he is worth that. Rozier's one of those guys where, you know, and you brought it up earlier, he doesn't get to the rim enough. He's not good enough to finish it. Like, he does it. He's an athletic player. He is a good athlete, but he doesn't depend on his athleticism so much. Like, not as much as you would expect him to. I just don't know if his offensive game is going to age real well in that way. So I would be real queasy about giving that guy anywhere near $20 million a year over 4 seasons. Over 2 seasons? Yeah, sure. Yeah. But over that long, that's a tough one for me as well.
Same here, especially as he's like exiting his prime, you know, like no thanks.
Right.
He doesn't give enough to, he's already bad defensively. He'll get worse on that end. It'll be tougher for him to get to the rim. He's not a great, you know, like playmaker for others, although he has flashes or whatever. No, I'll be honest with you. I don't really want any part of like Rozier's next contract unless it's short in this fashion that you're alluding to. And you really, you know, the team really sort of like fancies Rozier as part of like the interim core of this team. Mm-hmm. And maybe they like the fit with LaMelo, and who knows what happens with Terry and Devontae. So you've got to figure that out. But no, I am in no rush to extend him. In fact, I don't really want to. I also, like, as far as not getting it done this offseason too, like, let's just say Charlotte goes into next season. They don't trade Terry Rozier. Let's just say things don't go well next season for Charlotte, right? You know, they go into the season with playoff aspirations, but, you know, Hayward gets hurt, or LaMelo regresses, whatever it is. I would want the Terry expiring contract at the deadline to say, mm-hmm. to then shop that then too. Because like that thing is expiring now, but it's going to be expiring in February 2022. So no, I would not extend Terry Rozier anytime soon. And really, because he's at the height of his value as a trade asset right now. Mm-hmm. That in my opinion doesn't mean it's not the time then to then pony up and give him a raise. I hate to say it. Like, maybe, like you said, maybe there's some justification for it. It's like, he's played well, you know, guys should get, you know, when they play well, they should make money. Like, that's how the system kind of works or whatever. But I'd rather let someone else do that than the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, and this is not a Kemba Walker situation on expiring contract, right? Like yeah. Charlotte, we could see like where the end of the road was and how ugly it was going to be if they didn't do anything. And this Terry was a throw in, right? There's other players on this roster that are going to take us into the future. So, if he shoots it well again next season, like first half of the season leading up to the deadline, if these catch and shoot numbers, general 3-point shooting numbers stay the same, like. Somebody would give Charlotte, and let's say Charlotte's behind schedule in win-loss.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to pay a first-round pick to get this guy.
Yeah, I agree. Because, if he's playing at this level still, right, as a guy that can score from a couple levels and give you some shooting. Yeah, and, like, if they did that, too, it would be, like, I mean, it's not exactly splitting the atom to do this, but this is, like, the Sam Presti school of asset management, right? Like, you take an asset and you turn it into something else, right? You know what I mean? Like, so you take the Kemba's expiring, you turn into Rozier, and then if you turn that into a first round pick, and then who knows what that pick turns into. Like, you know, this stuff builds. And so, yes, that's why I would be interested in pursuing that route.
All right, Devontae Graham, a last player we're going to discuss in terms of Hornets offseason. He's a restricted free agent. I don't think there'll be a shortage of teams that are very interested in his services. Already talked about one of them, the Los Angeles Lakers. I think it's a good fit for Devontae. I think that they need his shooting badly. Again, a lot of teams need his backup point guard. I can run a team. I'm a high assist, low turnover player that has offensive struggles, no doubt. Anything inside the arc, basically. But I am a really good off the dribble shooter as well. Like, I think he just checks all the backup point guard boxes. So I think it's going to be a competitive market for Devontae, but he's only got a $4.7 million cap hold. The Hornets can hold on to his restricted rights. They can keep him on the books. They can say, go get an offer sheet. And basically from there, just assess if it makes sense with what else they got to do this offseason to build this roster as an under the cap team and just see if Devontae fits. I think it's pretty simple for Charlotte. So I do think there's a chance he's back. I do.
Yeah, I think so too. His presence seems sort of important to the DNA of this team. And it's like, even with LaMelo, there's very obviously a prominent role for him here in his ability to run a second unit, to close games. I know he did not shoot the pull-up three all that well this year, but we just have a two-year sample of him being a pretty darn good three-point shooter, both off the catch and off the dribble, with big-time range. And his pick and roll passing, his transition passing, he's a very good offensive player. There are a million numbers from looking at possession stats on Synergy to looking at, you know, go to dunks and threes and pull up, you know, the EPM. Like there's a lot of stuff that suggests when this guy's on the court, Charlotte's offense is substantially better. And to draft this guy in the second round to develop him, yeah, you know, you've got to really think about retaining him. You know, I think that's something that should be also be a priority for Charlotte this summer. But I know some of that, because of the nature of restricted free agency or whatever, could be that could be a little tricky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's one more thing Devontae brings to the team, to a team with LaMelo Ball, that I think is really important. And we saw it in the one postseason, you know, game we got to see from the Hornets there against the Pacers. But, you know, LaMelo and Devontae are very different in terms of pace, right? The speed they play at, how they play the game offensively. And I think that's really, really key for Charlotte to keep in their back pocket if they can. Moving forward is, you know, with LaMelo on the floor, they're trying to create transition opportunities, be aggressive in passing lanes defensively. I think with Devontae, he gives you the chess piece to, if a team drags you underwater and makes you play slower and makes you execute in the half court, Devontae Graham's a really key piece, in my opinion, to Charlotte's half court offensive success. And so I think that's one way to look at his value specifically for the Hornets. I think it's going to be interesting. Again, I think there's a chance, but I do think that somebody might overpay a little bit for Devontae, mostly because of his shooting.
Yeah. It's like, there are certain stats, when you see how little he gets to the rim and how he sort of struggles down in there, even when he does actually crack the defense, you know, that does puts a cap on sort of like, yep. You know, what role he can serve and how effective he can actually be for for an offense. The last thing one of the last things to mention, or just another thing to mention on Devontae, is like, if Charlotte trades Terry Rozier, we don't think they're going to do that, but if they did do that this offseason, you know, it's one thing if they bring back Luke Kennard, or if they get someone, some facsimile of Terry to sort of play that role. But I mean, let's say you traded Terry and it doesn't net you like another like shooting guard scorer type. Let's say you do that. Let's say you don't draft someone along those lines either. But let's say you bring back Devontae Graham. Devontae Graham can do a lot of the stuff that you used to run with Terry Rozier. Like a lot of those movement sets in the half court, Devontae, he was ridiculous shooting off the catch this season, shooting off movement. We talked about this on the pod. I think maybe when Rozier got hurt a little bit early in the season, just like, look, you should be able to copy and paste and put Devontae in. And they run some of that stuff with him, but not the same volume. You know, I just think of it as when you're trying to grease the offense, you know, playing Devontae with LaMelo, and then having Devontae be your off-ball mover type is like, that will be very, that like you can build a very good offense around that. Sure. You know, if Gordon Hayward and Miles Bridges and PJ Washington are on the court too. So I think that's another thing to consider, is that if you shopped Rozier, you actually moved him and you didn't get something to sort of like replace that presence in the lineup in terms of skill set, that Devontae can slide in and like absorb some of those possessions too.
Yeah, it's a great point. Last thing we'll mention on the Hornets offseason, before we jump into just a few minutes of a few draft prospects we want to discuss, is, you know, Miles Bridges, he's extension eligible. He will be, well, the league year needs to turn over first, but he will be up until the beginning of the 21-22 season. So he's just finished his third year on his rookie scale contract. Every rookie at that point is extension eligible. You know, this seems like a no-brainer. To me, that the Hornets should do everything they can to lock Miles up for four more years, or it could be five more years if he got the max extension. He won't get that, so four more years. But that will come after free agency. Obviously, Hornets have Miles Bridges' bird rights, so they can extend, you know, the cap to lock him down to an extension. So just something to keep in the back of your mind. That will probably be a business item for the Hornets once free agency ends and can go all the way up to the beginning of next season. BG, so let's take about 10 minutes here and talk about a few prospects. I'll lean on you mostly here. Before we jumped on, we talked about how are the Hornets going to plug, you know, the center spot. They probably need at least two centers if they're not going to bring back Cody Zeller this offseason. So in the last episode of BuzzBeat, there was some really good conversation about free agency options for the Hornets. BG and I are going to talk about a few draft options. Let's start with Usman Garuba. I'm not going to say these names slow because these are both European. Usman Garuba played for Real Madrid, 19 years old. BG, tell me about this guy. Why is he an option for Charlotte in the middle?
Yeah, and like to be clear, like Garuba, probably not a full-time five. I think a kind of guy we've talked a lot about, sort of like PJ Washington's diet to play the five, and maybe, you know, Garuba is somewhere in that where, you know, 25% of his possessions or 50%, you know, I just don't think he's necessarily a full-time five just given his size, but he can guard a bunch of positions. This guy has the chance to be the best defender in the draft, I think, possibly. Monster help defender, big time athlete, you know, rim protector. His pick and roll defense is interesting. He can do a lot of different stuff, switch, drop. So I he's a guy that if I were Charlotte, I would be considering very strongly. And I think, you know, you're maybe not solving all of the things you're trying to get at center, but he really helps the Charlotte defense that needs rim protection, that needs some punch up front. And I do think it would make for some interesting lineup combinations with PJ and with Miles and with some of, you know, Gordon Hayward or, you know, LaMelo and some of the other young guards. So there's a chance, though, that Garuba, like, could actually be more of, like, a big wing. And I think there's a case to be made for that, too. Like, there are, like, he has the ability to make plays for others. His defense is really, really good. We talked about some of these help responsibilities and just how impactful he can be there. There are big time questions with shooting mechanics, but I think he has serious upside. as a help defender and a guy that can really influence and deter shots at the rim. So again, I don't know if he's sort of like the proto five that Charlotte should be looking for, but he is like the defender, a defender type that they should be targeting. So I would really like Garuba. I think if Charlotte ends up keeping the 11th pick, which I think they will, and they end up drafting in that range, I don't think that's necessarily too high for Garuba. And again, I think he has the chance to be a real impact defender in the NBA and help early and really be a guy that could, you know, develop and grow with this the young nucleus in Charlotte.
Yeah, I just started, full disclosure, watching film, highlights, tape, whatever, on draft prospects this week. I did get to look at Garuba a little bit. I mean, yeah, his defensive intangibles are obvious. He's a guy that's going to be able to guard 1 through 5, you know, to all the points that Brian was making. You know, he's obviously very raw offensively. He's got a long way to go on that end. And what makes it even more of a mystery is, to the point you were getting at, BG, it's like, is he a big wing? Is he a small ball center? Is he just somewhere, depending on the lineup and the matchup? That's the one thing that gives me a little bit of cold feet. I mean, you could also argue that that's a plus. He's a big-time unknown, though. That's one thing about Garuba that I think you just watch him for 5 minutes, and you're like, all right, there's a lot to take in here. But, yeah. Yes, he's going to be a plus defensive player immediately. Mm-hmm. But offensively, he's going to be a negative immediately. And you wonder, does that part of the game ever come online? He's not the same player as Matisse Thybulle at all, but I think that's like an archetype to, if you just want to think about how patient you're going to be with a guy like this who's going to impact one side of the floor, I think you would kind of start with Thybulle, because, you know, we know how good of a wing defender he is. I mean, he might be the best in the world, but, you know, offensively, there's just like, we don't know if this is ever going to happen. So yeah, I wouldn't mind it at 11. I'm not blown away, though.
Yeah, the one thing would be, and Garuba's a guy that's been on, like, he's been on international radars for probably about 2 years now. But, you know, the thought would be, the Thybulle is an interesting discussion point, but it's also like, you know, Garuba has been playing professional for a couple of years now. Thybulle was coming in after, you know, 4 year college career too. So it's like, you do have it feels like there's more of a window, I feel like, to like really like energy focus on development. So, but yeah, I think highly of Garuba as a prospect, and I think he has a chance to be really, really big time like defender and like help defender at the rim.
All right, the second prospect we're going to touch on before we get out of here, and I might say this first name. I know I have the last name correct. I might say the first name wrong. Alperen Sengun. I butchered that, didn't I, BG? You probably know.
Yeah. No, you did all right. You did all right.
All right. Well, I'm impressed with Sengun. I think that he is an extremely polished offensive player. You watch him play. You watch his body language. You watch his footwork, his up and under prowess. I mean, there's a lot of European centers that we know. You know, some Nikola Jokic touch, some Yusuf Nurkic kind of stuff. I mean, you see a lot of those kind of players in his game. I mean, you can tell that he's really studied their game. So I think he's a good passer. I just think he's a fascinating fit with LaMelo Ball. He's a little heavy footed. He's not an exceptional athlete. You know, he doesn't have, you know, the length of a Miles Turner or anything like this. But man, I think he's a really, really skilled and talented offensive player that is going to translate to the NBA. And he's super young. You know, we can't be sure. He's not even 19 years old yet. I mean, we don't even know that he's done growing either. 6'10", 240 pounds with the offensive numbers that, you know, that he's put up. I'm pretty high on Sengun. And when I started digging in on him this week and then kind of went over to draft Twitter and took the temperature, I was a little surprised to see that I think most people are lukewarm on Sengun. BG, what do you think about him and his potential fit in Charlotte?
I like him as a prospect, maybe not the fit so much with Charlotte, although I think there's maybe some conflicting opinions there. But, you know, good low block scorer, good finisher around the basket, can self-create a little bit off the dribble. Definitely not like a bad athlete. I mean, he's thrown down some pretty impressive dunks you know, either like, you know, attacking off a off the dribble or a putback look. Like he can get up and finish a little bit, but not like an elite athlete. You know, struggles guarding quicker players. You know, we'll see how far out he can extend his shooting range. And you brought up his size. Like, you know, is he a four and a five's body? I mean, I don't know if it's quite along those lines, but maybe a little undersized to just sort of like you can just know that for sure that he can, you know, routinely give you that physicality that inside. But, you know, I like his playmaking. I like his scoring. I like his ability to function in a, you know, a motion type offense, which I guess, you know, it's, you know, depending on what Charlotte's running is like is something that could play to his strengths a little bit. So I like him. He would not be of this like center group. He is the one I like him, but I'm like a little lower on him than some of these other guys. And we should mention some of these other names too, but just other players for Charlotte to consider around 11 would be Isaiah Jackson, who has sort of offers out of Kentucky, who offers that discrete set of skills that Charlotte's probably looking for in a center. The lob bot, you know, he would be LaMelo throwing lobs to Jackson would be pretty impressive. It feels like if Kentucky had been a little bit better this year, people broadly speaking would have seen Ijax a little bit more. And I mean, he really can be a potentially, you know, special disruptive defender, such a long, impactful athlete. Another guy to consider in this range. I don't know how much Auburn you watched this year, but JT Thor, super duper long, can really be an impact of like, you know, pretty good stocks numbers in terms of block rate, steal rate, can do some sort of interesting stuff with his shot as far as like running around and trying to get up threes. Like he's not completely like allergic to doing that. So Thor is another, and he's so long that he is also a very intriguing prospect for Charlotte to target at center. And then if I were throwing, you know, at least one more name out there, I would also mention Kai Jones out of Texas. I think he's more of like a four and a half. And defensively, he's pretty lost. I'm not really thrilled with how he can rotate around reliably and protect the rim. It's just, he tries hard. He has a good motor and he's long, and like laterally, he moves like a wing. You know, he's like a 6'11 wing. It's crazy to watch him, you know, cut and shoot pull-ups and like do all this wild stuff. Like he's a really crazy athlete. I just don't know if he's right now, you can project out and say like, oh, the median outcome of him is like, you know, the rim protector that Charlotte, or the defender that Charlotte is sort of like looking, the lob threat that Charlotte is sort of looking for. But I do really like Kai Jones a lot as a prospect. So those are a couple other names I would throw out that are in this sort of like draft range and in this position type as well.
It's going to be an you know, if Charlotte lands at 11, it will be interesting to see where they look there. I mean, we all know what the need is at center, but this draft isn't, it's not lit. It does have a good amount of centers in it, I think, that could be good players in the league, but there's no surefire other than Evan Mobley, and pretty good bet that Charlotte's not going to have a chance to draft him.
Yeah, they're very small chance. I mean, he would be like a dream. Like, you know, I mean, if Charlotte had a top three pick, it would be that. I mean, they would be doing the moonwalk because, you know, very good chance you're going to get Evan. You know, you're going to get Evan Mobley at this range that they're in. I would prefer that Charlotte go wing. I mean, go best player available, go wing, and then use free agency to sort of like satisfy the need at center. I know we're trying to get out of here, but would you mind if I brought up one last guy before we close this thing down? This is again, I'm sure by this point, you know, when we talk about these prospects, we're not actually introducing any, but like people follow the draft year round. Like this is a thing, but Jaden Springer is a guy that there seems to be a fair amount of variance in between where he's being mocked and sort of similar to maybe like Tyrese Maxey last season. You know, there's one contingent online that is higher on Jaden Springer than, you know, John Gavoni or some of these other people that are doing the ESPN mocks or whatever. But he's 18 years old, played at Tennessee this past season, won't turn 19 until late September. He's the youngest college/American prospect in the draft. He'll basically be a month younger than Patrick Williams was a year ago. at the 2020 draft, who was the youngest American college prospect at that draft. But 6'3", 6'4", you know, probably like a plus three wingspan. So, you know, nothing too crazy, but he weighs, you know, 205 pounds and he's built. I mean, the guy is like pretty well developed for someone that won't turn 19 until, you know, almost 4 months from now. He's from Charlotte, two seasons at Rocky River High School, and then two seasons at IMG Academy. But just here's why I really like Springer and why I like his fit for Charlotte. It starts sort of probably with his functional athleticism, but he's strong, creates good contact as a driver, uses his strength to create contact in those like in those sort of like initial post-contact windows, draws fouls, finishes, has good touch on those looks, you know, able to get his shoulder into his defender, separate, and just flick these shots deep in the paint right in. And you also see his strength sometimes as like a rim protector, like a guy that rotates around. He can play with vertical. I know he's not that long, but just he's strong in the chest and he's hard to displace in the air. And he plays with good verticality. And you see his strength show up there too. Pretty quick, you know, good for not super duper explosive, but solid first step, solid first dribble. And he really uses that strength to create these pockets or gaps of advantage. And along with his jump stop and shot fakes, like he's a good triple threat face up player. And that's something we sort of saw more and more as the season went on at Tennessee. But I really like his triple threat face up game, like wants to show you the ball, shot fake, and then drive. But at all times, like, you know, Springer shot ready on the wing. And that helps sort of like launch into some of these attack situations. And he's just constantly doing small things to like pick up a little bit of advantage on the margin. So being shot ready, the shot fake, the first step, like that's just efficient spot up driving. And I really like that out of him. Not a super crazy vertical leaper with a ton of pop or whatever. He's a 2 foot leaper a la Jalen Suggs, which can, you know, impact some aspects of his finishing and make stuff a little bit more challenging, but incredible body control in the air. You know, maybe nothing crazy in terms of like midair contortion and hang time, but just the ability to sort of like glide and avoid offensive fouls, good balance, good body control, stop, change speeds, decelerate, anything to sort of like ditch a defender. And I think he even does a pretty nice job sort of like synchronizing some of these moves and having combo moves to put together as a, in terms of his own offensive creation, really quick hands, times his steal opportunities well. And then the thing that I sort of really focus in on, like we can talk about how important it is to be a good on-ball defender or not, like varying degrees of importance depending on who you talk to, but he's really tremendous guarding the basketball, as is his teammate Keon Johnson at Tennessee, who's another guy that Charlotte should probably kick the can on. But that Springer, as good as he is on the basketball, would really help Charlotte. I love his fit into the core with LaMelo and Hayward as a guy that could be guard opposing point guards. You put him in there at the two. He shot really well. He shot pretty well on a limited sample this season, but the shot looks really good and he can give you some on-ball defense, which this team desperately needs at the point of attack. But yeah, he can disrupt shit on the ball against a variety of position types, including smaller, twitchier guards. I think he'll be able to guard NBA point guards. I think he can help Charlotte next season, even though he'll only be 19. And obviously just a massive development piece for Charlotte to have going forward. Last thing here, just good baseline level of shooting and feel. I think he projects as a pretty good shooter. There are some good indicators. There's a versatility component. So those pull-up twos that I talked about, the pump, drive, jump stop, soft touch on a runner, a jump shot in the lane. Like I really, really like his body control and touch on those looks. His shooting form is good. You know, it's consistent motion. There's no waste, just an efficient shot. So, and he put up great numbers this season at Tennessee, despite having to be like, you know, at times their primary playmaker, even though he was a very young freshman. So he's going to be there at 11. I feel pretty confident saying, but I really do think Jaden Springer has a chance to be one of the best players in this draft. I think he's a guy that makes a ton of sense with Charlotte. And I think he's a guy that as we get closer to the draft, we should really focus in on. I think there are a variety of guys that Charlotte's going to have the opportunity to pick at 11. If that's where the pick lands, right? Right. And Springer's, I think, in my opinion, should be on the short list of guards or wings that they're looking at there.
Yeah, I mean, a developing player, no question about it. You know, you brought it up, youngest player, college player in the draft. You make a great case of how good of a defensive fit he is. I agree with that. You know, if Jaden Springer learns to be a lead guard, set the table, half court kind of offensive talent, I mean, yeah, you got to think all the rest of the intangibles you brought up, or he's going to be a really good player. So, all right, let's get out of here, BG. More draft prospect conversation, as you guys know, will be in the future on BuzzBeat. Until next time, I'm Spencer. That's BG. Thanks for joining.